Welcome to the Month 7 Investival ETR Briefing. And the one we're presenting today covers the trading period from the 1st of July until the 31st of July. As the briefing documents explains, exchange-traded receivables or leases, monetary obligations or bills issued under contract for assets, goods and services that are supplied to investment quality companies are credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. So what this means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another. Typically, these tend to be large companies or banks that are household names. And they owe money to their smaller micro to medium sized suppliers. So we call these micro to medium sized supplier businesses originators because they originate the debt obligation transactions that creates the ETR that are traded on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange buys these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. In so doing, when the ETR are settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that is settled and the discounted price that it was purchased at creates a margin, and it's that margin that creates the yield or return for investors. Credit exchange also provides different credit facilities for other types of transactions, such as trade finance, asset finance, and so on. Essentially, they all work on the same principles that the traded ETR is a business transaction. The exchange provides liquidity and is paid a commission for doing so, much in the same way a bank charges interest. At the end of July, Credit Exchange held active RSA of Euro 17.18 million. And this remains a fairly consistent level for more than a year now. As you all know, RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreement. And a revolving sale agreement is a document or contract between the micro to medium sized business or the originator and Credit Exchange. The revolving sale agreement is a commitment by the originator to sell a certain value of ETR to the exchange in any given period. Typically, this is for 1 year. So the example I always give is, let's say an originator needs a revolving credit facility of 250,000 in order to run their business. They will come to Credit Exchange, much like they would to a bank, and apply for that credit facility. If we agree to offer them the 250,000 on a revolving basis every 60 days, they are agreeing to sell to us 250,000 worth of ETR every 60 days, and therefore the revolving sale agreement, or RSA, will be for 1.5 million worth of ETR over a 12-month period. This commitment to sell the 1.5 million of ETR annually to the exchange is documented in the RSA agreement with the exchange. And as stated at the end of July, Credit Exchange held 17.18 million of these active RSA contracts. The active RSA contracts continue to remain short as trading patterns, speed of settlement, and the shortening of the cash-to-cash life cycles increase with more commodity shipping transactions in our business. Trade finance in its purest form, i.e. finance that supports commodity trades and shipping related transactions, continues to be a core activity on the trade desk. In May, I mentioned the significant increase in leasable assets during 2020, and that having purchased 7 ships and looking to purchase several more, we would again be significantly increasing the asset side of the business as our shipping market develops. There were 2 other vessels being progressed during the last presentation, and we completed the chemical tanker purchase earlier this month. You may recall that it operates in the Black Sea and the Mediterranean, whilst the other vessel was a specialist towing ship that was being used by the National Petroleum Construction Company in Abu Dhabi. However, at the 11th hour, having agreed all funds would flow through the exchange, the originator sought to change this basic requirement, so the credit risk team rejected that deal. Unfortunate as it might be, we will not compromise on what we know to be best practice. Not to worry though, we have more than a dozen other opportunities at various stages of being considered. So we're far from concerned about the appetite for our product or indeed the capacity for credit facilities in our market. This was the reason why we reopened the leasable market on the 1st of August, as we seek to capitalize on this specific type of opportunity. You may also recall in June and July, we were looking at the car leasing market, both in Ireland and the United Kingdom. Neither of those opportunities has materialized yet, and we expected to conclude at least one of them before the end of the summer. But as yet, I'm not seeing the deal desk progress this as fast as I'd expect. Having said that, given my own belief that the investment market in Ireland and to an extent in the UK is a little too overcooked at the moment, consumer leasing may not be the wisest move. Speaking with an ex-Bank of Ireland leasing senior staffer recently, we were discussing how the first defaults occur on car lease payments when markets collapse. So we'll need to be extra vigilant when we are considering that market, if and when it comes back to us. Anyway, going back to the shipping assets, these underpin our primary focus being that of trade finance. On that, just for those of you who aren't clear on what trade finance actually is, it is the financial products, in our case, ETR, that are used by companies to facilitate international trade in the movement of finished goods and commodities between companies in different countries. In March, I spoke about the Baltic Index as the index for shipping and how it would break 3,000 this year. This happened in May. It dipped below it in early June, but has remained above the 3,000 mark, and today it's over the 4,000 mark for the first time since 2010. This saw a hectic week in various markets, helped by the strength of dry cargo markets continuing to climb. Ship ballasting to Brazil and in the North Atlantic have been in short supply, causing spot rates on the Brazil to China benchmark rate increased to over 36,000 per ton on Friday last. Meanwhile, Clarksons say its new building price index stood at 144 points, its highest level since August 2009. This year, the price of a 15,000 TEU container ship has increased by 28% to 143 million, and the price of an 1,800 deadweight tonnage Capesize bulk carrier has increased by 28% this year to just short of 60 million. Looking at the future freight agreement or FFA markets, they continue to be unstable and volatile. In June alone, on the Panamax 4TC rate that we monitor, rates went as low as 18,000 and as high as 36,000. Today they're at 33.25. Looking at 36,000 for October and for quarter four. What this means is that there's strong optimism in these derivative financial futures. And as you may know, this is a prediction on the cargo transport prices ahead of time. They are another strong indicator of trade flow in general. And as per prior briefings, volumes continue to rise and continuate strong short-term growth. This market has outperformed all expectations and records for a decade and more. So when you look at the closure of things like the Ningbo Shoshan port in China, COVID, the Suez Canal blockage in May, and the skyrocketing oil prices currently hitting $75 a barrel, looking like it's got some strength in its growth path, then you start to see real issues such as global shortages of things like the microchip. These are all real, tangible, and serious issues, so much so that the European Commission recently stated they want to increase their contribution of global chip production by doubling it from 10% to 20% in an attempt to avoid the current global microchip shortage and how this is affecting thousands of manufacturing plants across Europe. Everything from lawnmowers, telephones, domestic appliances, trucking, transport, airplanes, cars, national utilities. These all rely on and depend on sustainable production capacity that is currently at levels that should concern us all. Looking at this issue of shortages and weakening capacity, the number of ships at anchor waiting for berth space to open up at America's two largest box ports hit a new record last week, with more than 40 ships forming queues further and further away from the terminals at both Los Angeles and Long Beach. When striking, longshoremen repeatedly closed the ports for 10 days and 8 days back in 2002 and 2004. The ship queues never exceeded 30 vessels. And still, those port lockdowns caused significant economic chaos. The situation today is far more serious. Retailers in the U.S. are battling record low inventories, likely meaning the container crunch will worsen in the coming weeks. And if you look to ratios like the inventories to sales ratios, you'll see the relationship between the end of month values of inventory to the value of monthly sales. These ratios can be looked at as indicators of the number of months of inventory that are on hand in relation to the sales for any given month. So, for example, a ratio of 2.5 would indicate that the retail stores have enough merchandise on hand to cover 2.5 months of sales. In April 2020, the rate was a healthy 1.67, but it now stands at just 1.08 in the US. Globally, it stands at 1.25 and has only ever been at this level once before, back in 2011. So rising inflation has been the focus of global policymakers in recent weeks, as the rapid economic recovery has caused a mismatch between supply and demand, while businesses try to rebuild their inventories and overcome supply chain hurdles that were caused by the pandemic. U.S. retail giant Walmart recently passed Amazon from its position as the world's largest retailer outside of China. They revealed that they had chartered in several vessels to mitigate supply chain issues that are threatening its supply of goods. The company recently reported revenue of $566 billion over the past 12 months, and they have the resources to charter vessels to ensure its shelves are fully stocked. But for the smaller retailers in the U.S. and elsewhere, battling to secure slots in the current container crunch, the situation is pretty dire. Some face the prospect of going out of business altogether by the end of the year, simply because of the freight costs or because they're unable to get their inventory delivered on time. Home Depot, another U.S. Example, where they announced in June that they were also chartering ships. So China has been sucking in raw materials and bulkers and pouring out finished goods for export on container ships. But port congestion and a mismatch of export and import needs have raised rates dramatically, while new build ship ordering levels pre-2021 were very low. So now shipyards that were devastated by a previous downturn in demand have consolidated and begun to apply upward pressure on new building prices. So the total world commercial fleet, which is valued at $1.2 trillion, was at a level of only $700 billion in 2010. So in 11 years, it's heading towards doubling, and it's already 25% up in 2021, where new building prices are at their highest levels again since 2009. So we in credit continue to be thankful that we are early to this market and consider ourselves fortunate and prudent that we waited for this market to turn. And turn it did, but as I mentioned earlier, to levels never seen in the history of shipping. And this time, the banks are scarce and those that serve the market are overly cautious. These banks operate almost exclusively in the new to 15 years old sectors. Of the few that remain in the market, many are avoiding the oil and gas sector and the offshore markets because the products breach their environmental, social, and governance, or ESG, mandates. we too have an ESG mandate, but we're realistic and pragmatic, where our counterparties are not. You can't switch off the global needs for fossil fuels overnight. It's just not possible. So we continue to support the 15 years and older market sector, and indeed the offshore vessels are very much a feature of our portfolio. On the subject of new build versus the older second-hand ships market, I was quietly pleased when told recently on a call with a German broker that Berenberg Bank, based in Hamburg, which is the second oldest bank in Europe, have a policy of never buying new ships and preferred 10 to 15-year-old vessels. This is another confirmation that our policy and market approach would seem to be both cautious and mature. Returning to the briefing, it states that there were 32.82 million of fully allocated funds, and this is more than a 30% drop on last month's figure of 44 million. But we've already seen a bounce on that in August, and we'll report on that recovery figure in next month's briefing. We remain thankful that we are fortunate enough to be able to sustain this market. And what this fully allocated figure means is the exchange held almost 33 million worth of ETR on the 31st of July. This means it was roughly 33 million worth of investors' funds in the market on the last day of the month. If you add that number to the 17.18 million of RSA or evolving sale agreements, that represents future orders we have that are not yet filled, and this is slightly more than 50 million in total. In other words, in July, there was a slight reversal of the strong growth from April, but overall, we're happy with the result, and overall, things are medium to stable. Moving on to the next figure, July's briefing shows that investors redeemed 0.56 million, and this is consistent with withdrawals for the same period in prior years. The ratio of money in versus money out in July remained a good performer and well above the norm of 2-to-1, where more funds come into the exchange than left. In May and June, the ratio remained at 5-to-1, meaning for every euro that left the exchange, 5 came in. In July, this figure eased somewhat and was at 7-to-2. As you know, these investors' funds are a mixture of private companies using ETR as a safe haven for the cash, and an even split of pension funds in the form of ARF, PRB, and PRSAs, alongside private investors' savings. The current economic and social crisis remains good for investable ETR, with continued liquidity and stability in our market as we enter the second half of the year. This then brings the focus of the briefing to the ETR average duration of 86 days. And this number, as you know, is what we call the credit index. It is the ETR average duration or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. Overall, since the end of last year and or early January of this year, this number seemed to be holding stable at the 90 mark, although it did spike in March up to 121. But it's back down, as you can see, and 86 is a good number, although it still remains 15% above the credit index average of 75 days. So the credit index is the cash-to-cash cycle from the day an ETR is issued and purchased in cash, and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash to be returned. So we regard it as an economic indicator of our market, and it continues to look like we're getting back to the business norm. The last figure in paragraph one of the briefing shows the trading result of 22.07 million in July, and this was more than 50% higher than the same figure for June. This is another medium result for the month, but as you'll see, was not as good as July of last year. Year on year, when you consider year to date, the overall performance to July of 2021 is 12% behind the figures for July of 2020, and we remain off target for the year's budget. Below last month's trading figure of 22.07 is the treasury performance of 27.55 million. This means that we spent 20% less than we collected. As explained at previous briefings, as trade increases in 1 month, as it did in June, and then decreases as it did in July, treasury will be stronger in the month following the stronger trade. So this ebb and flow of trade to treasury are showing good performance overall. As always, Trade Desk and Treasury continue to monitor this trade balance of funds in versus funds out to ensure it remains stable and within the control parameters set down by the credit risk policy that governs the risk and general exchange trading policy. Moving to the center of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top 10 rated holdings. These two lists show what companies or organizations owed the exchange the largest amounts of money at the end of July. And as usual, you can see the HSE continues to hold their slot as they've done for over a year now. We can also see the repeated appearance of Atradius, Vodafone and Cork City Council. Good to see Pfizer that returned in June, remained in July. And there's two new additions in July, namely B-Pods and Shepherd Building Group. These are two interesting construction-related companies. B-Pod deliver high-quality bathroom pods, constructed off-site and delivered to building sites ready to install. This means that where it used to take days or even weeks to fit out a complete bathroom suite on-site, they can now be delivered, fitted and plumbed in a single day. The Shepherd Group was founded in England in the 1890s. So the group's got a long history, and its success comes from its manufacturing and distribution operations in the UK and across Europe. Its flagship business is the Porta Cabin unit, and this makes Shepherd a market leader in modular buildings. So the group employs more than 1,750 people across seven European countries, providing its porta cabin units to schools, hospitals, laboratories, and so on. As the pioneers of modular construction, porta cabin can deliver permanent quality buildings of any size, and just like the B-Pod, can do so up to 70% faster than using traditional construction methods, or so it says on their website anyway. Moving to the top 10 rated investable ETR on the right-hand side, Pfizer with their IG rating topped the list for a second month. And then there's the regular appearance of MediaMath, Paramount 21 and others. These are the highest rated debtors. And apart from Pfizer, as none of these were investment grade or IG, they don't have a rating as at the end of July. So the remainder of this list shows a random selection of organizations, regardless of the amount of their liability, and is simply a selection of the most creditworthy. Moving to the pie chart below these two sets of lists, continues to demonstrate the significant change in a typically well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. The HSE here in Ireland and the NHS in the UK, along with others in the health community, remain stable, but lower for July at 12.42%. Since Q2 of last year, this pie chart has a repeated heavy exposure to the wholesale retail market. And as per prior statements throughout last year's briefings, this is more wholesale and food retail based businesses. As you may well know, organizations like Tesco, Musgrave and others make regular appearances in our top 10 largest holdings. Looking at the wholesale trade, this continues to perform well and has remained between 35 and 40% for the past year and more. But as you can see, it spiked in July at 43.14%. And this is most likely due to people holidaying at home, as well as enjoying the unusually good weather in July, maybe. Food and beverage held steady at around the 7% mark, with the businesses business and services sector remaining down at 8.5%, and the manufacturing sector holding steady at circa 9.15. Construction peaked in June at 14% and dropped off somewhat back to 11.11 for July, and there's no other really significant changes showing. The pie chart still continues to reference the EU NACE categorization system, and the adoption of our own credit classification is a component part of the new credit machine software. This is due for release in the second half of this year, and July, August are were data months of the circa 1 million transaction records that needed to be reformatted prior to being imported. Today, 70% of that data has been imported, and this week, next week, is when the real testings begin. So we're behind target on delivering this new trading system, but I'm confident we'll still meet our ultimate objective of turning off our old systems by year end. Returning to the actual performance of the exchange in July of 2020 versus 2021, you can see that last year's PPE trades were a strong feature. And as we haven't done any PPE trades since April, July's trades value for this year are behind by some 8%, despite the fact that trade volumes were up by 7%. I've also discussed the investors' withdrawal and the credit index of 86. And to finish on our performance in July, the largest single trade was a trade finance deal of 3.2 million. From the earlier part of this briefing, where I discussed the short supply on the Brazil to China benchmark route, this particular transaction was a single grain trade at 3.2 million. That same route was half the price in June, where we showed you the largest trade being at 1.67 million. So you can see that the supply and demand forces on that route have pushed the same single voyage cost to almost double in July what it was less than a month ago, or sorry, the prior month. As explained in the investable brochure and also at other briefings, the average value of an ETR is circa 2,000 euro, but we have traded where the value is less than a euro. And as you can see here, the trade last month was 3.2 million. This particular transaction also used future freight agreements or FFA contracts, as did the June trade, where our originator hedges any increase in the cargo rate ahead of time. This freight broker uses credit to purchase the FFA derivatives and fix the ship at future dates that gives them a competitive advantage in this clearly volatile market. And that is one of the reasons why the rollout of the credit machine trading system is so important. It'll enable us to track and trace multiple FFA derivative deals and cross-match the electronic FFA trade to the physical shipping trade much more smoothly and easily. Finally, let's move to the trend section of the July briefing, where you can see that the investor's yield or buy price during July started at 2.091 and ended at 2.105. As I've been saying for the most of the year now, with the negative yield of circa 1% on bank deposits, the investors are getting yield that is now over 3% better by buying exchange traded receivables on demand, cash equivalent offered by credit exchange. As you all know, this rate changes daily and can be checked anytime on the investable.com website homepage. As the yield moved past 2% in April, the money in versus money out ratios I've mentioned earlier have been good since May. Throughout the summer, we've been seeing stronger and stronger supply coming from originators. To ease the pressure a little here, on the 1st of August, we reopened the leasable market. This has helped somewhat, but the availability of good quality supply continues. And if, as I think it will, this continues further, then the investable rate will be required to rise significantly in order to meet that demand. We will hit Will we hit 2.5, 3, or even 3%? Who's to know? But with the last third of the year in our sights, this is typically our busiest period. So don't be surprised to see a sharp or quick spike in the investable rate at any moment during the coming months. So to finish the briefings, you will see a repeat of the active RSA or revolving sale agreement of €17.18 million. And that concludes this month's briefing for July 2021. Thank you.